fan. Sirius 219, XM 201. Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevevick.com. Beautiful, really lovely morning, upstate New York. Yesterday, it felt like winter was on our doorstep, and today it's reverted back to kind of a lovely, seasonable fall day. This would have been nice for the sale yesterday. Whatever the weather was, it certainly didn't affect what went on in the sales ring. The show just marches on. Big numbers and very competitive. And in fact, after the sale, we went out to the Village, out to Village Pizzeria, which is out 29 heading out of Saratoga, heading west, and in Galway, kind of a knuckle curveball dining option when you're around Saratoga. Sandy and Joe out there, and very popular with with long-term Saratoga people. And last night there was like it was like a mid Saratoga season scene. The place was a Monday night in October. Place was packed, and went with Gary and Josephine. And for those that have actually asked, Josephine doing well, and continues to, keep tabs on the heart. But Gary and Joe and Olga, who was in she was supposed to buy a horse or two. didn't get to see Woodbury, although I just heard from him. Woodbury Payne. And I guess Olga missed the chance. She was supposed to buy a weanling and got distracted. But the numbers, we had a really fun evening, actually. And it felt like Saratoga season over there. The competition and, essentially, I wasn't paying as close attention to the broodmares and the broodmare prospects, but on the weanling front, they're fighting hand over fist to get bloodstock. It's just crazy. You had record-setting numbers, and I guess that was anticipated. Just the way things are going this fall, and now the scene shifts toward the phasing sale and at the end of the month, and more yearlings through the ring. But the weanlings are interesting because you get to see some early hints from. And granted, it's not all the first crop produce from Kentucky, but there's always a few that make it in, and that part of it was pretty notable. Catalina Cruiser, there's a good example. Catalina Cruiser and a filly to the Reeves, and it came up yesterday, and of course, Christoph was active yesterday, too. He signed a few tickets himself after we talked to him, but it was a sequel offering, a Catalina Cruiser filly out of Catch a Rising Star, $190,000. So, Catalina Cruiser, the Union Rag son, just getting going, and that's a nice tally. Early on, there was a Bolt Doro colt to Willowbrook, $120,000 that Summerfield offered, the Van Landing Ducks. And there was also a $120,000 Cantheros colt as well, sharing the top billing for the males. And Vinnie Viola, St. Elias by itself, with quite a few. They were busy. In fact, I will make use of the sorting technique. Here you go. St. Elias, 190,000. Cantheros Colt, tied for the top knockdown for males. And they also bought, that was from, actually, they, three of their four purchases came from Vinery. They also bought two Vino Rosos, which is not unexpected, supporting their young stallion. So there's a, you know, there's a good example of, you know, an owner involved in helping, you know, get some notoriety for their young stallion. $200,000 colts, late in the sale, actually, that Vinery was offering. And they also took a $95,000 filly by Connect that Summerfield was offering. So whether with or without Mike Rapoli, Vinny Viola, and St. Elias, very busy. The Reeves, same thing. The name keeps coming up, and you keep seeing Dean and Patty and partners in the afternoon and here on the sales front. The sale topper, the Catalina Cruiser. They also bought a Freud. This is a colt from Sequel, $100,000. They bought a Malibu Moon Colt, $95,000. And Mucho Macho Man, they obviously, lots of affection for Mucho Macho Man. This is a filly that Harry Landry brought to the sale. There were a couple, you know, there were a couple of names. I'll probably do some of this with Sid tomorrow, too, and just get Sid's thoughts after he's had a chance to look. And the OBS, you know, postscript as well, but there was a couple of besides Catalina Cruiser with the sail topper, which is certainly a big deal for him. First opportunity with the Weanlings. I'll give you, well, Audible, and I don't think that's a surprise. Audible had a number of, you know, mid-priced weanlings that sold, including a $62,000 filly to Long Road Stable. Clement bought one for $85,000, an Audible filly. Colin Brennan bought an Audible colt, $55,000. And here's another Audible, $45,000, to Blue Water. So the Audibles, the first Audibles that get dangled. But Flame Away caught my eye, and I'm gonna scroll down and tell you what Flame Away did. I thought this was kind of notable. You just kind of go through, you know, you go through numbers. Flame Away Colt, $10,000 in a private sale. There was a $24,000 R&A. Here's a $17,000 Flame Away Colt, a $30,000 Flame Away Colt. Just, you know, that's a notable, you know, for somebody that, you know, it wasn't like, you know, Flame Away was a hard trier, you'll recall. It was one of those horses, right? A horse that did not like to get passed. And, you know, this is another Scat Daddy son, right? I mean, the Justifies and the Mendelsons, we've already established, are... So here's Flame Away coming up behind. This may be the bargain. Is this the bargain son of Scat Daddy to get behind? Just a thought. I'll let Sid riff on that. Anyway, they had a robust day at the Humphrey Finney Pavilion and the sales grounds. And I should also give a quick glance, because I did not, as I mentioned, I really was not paying attention to the broodmares. Let's see. Although it is worthwhile to look, because there also is a scenario where you have first crop stallions that have gotten mares into foal, and see who's, you know, see if there's any hints in there. Here's one of the top ones. It looks like Willowbrook bought for $50,000, bought Quivery. That was in full to McLean's Music. This is a Violence Mare. And Winifred J., look at that, $25,000 to Willowbrook as well, carrying a Matoli baby. Chester Broman, as we've said repeatedly this summer and into, you know, between the yearling sale, for somebody that, you know, for Chet and Mary that were supposedly getting out of the business, they're still plenty active. $50,000 for Mo Justice, who's carrying this is a Lemon Drop Kid mare that's carrying a Motown. Well, that's another feather in the Motown cap. You know, Solomini, his first weanlings, and he had some mares covered too. So there's plenty of little hints that are kicking around in there, and I'll let Sid riff. In fact, while we're starting with bloodstock news, let me slip in a couple of other bloodstock notes, and again, I'll hand a lot of this over to Sid tomorrow. Distorted Humor and Congrats, yesterday the word came out, are being pensioned. And you know, obviously, you know, Distorted Humor, more high profile, and, you know, splashed across the Stallion Galaxy when Funny Side was produced in his first crop. And he had plenty of other very, very nice horses. And he's got sons that, you know, have gone on to stand any given Saturday. And Jimmy Creed, there you go. Some good mares, too. Flower Alley. I forgot that. Flower Alley. Distorted Humor. Son. And you know, Drosselmeyer, too. Of course. Boisterous. And the Wonderful Hysterical Lady. She was a personal favorite. Yeah. Bit of Whimsy. Bit of Whimsy was a grade one winner for Distorted Humor. So, Distorted Humor, 28, excuse me. Congrats, 21. And congrats, you know, one of those kind of blue-collar stallions that you know, got just a lot of nice runners. Top 10 sire by winners for the last 6 years. Pretty good. Pretty darn good. And started in Florida in 2007 at Cloverleaf, and then came to Kentucky. 122 winners total. Interesting. Interesting side note. And again, this is the kind of thing I'll let Sid dig into. But he was the only champion freshman sire of AP Indy. Interesting. Which kind of gives you an indication that it's more, you know, it's more usual for AP Indy sons to gather momentum. He's going to, congrats, is going to end up at Woodford. And very nice quote, actually, in TDN from John Sykes. Congrats helped me get started in the business and has meant so much to Woodford. And Distorted Humor is going to stay at Windstar, where he will be available to be viewed. So I'll let Sid handle that. Some more on that. And how about the news yesterday that Knicks Go is going to end up at TaylorMade? Made the deal, and there'll be more of these as we get closer, of course, to Breeders' Cup, right? And and speaking of regional sales, I didn't want to let the Indiana sale go. I saw some missives from the sale on Saturday that was held at the track, and a Bechero Philly was the sale topper. $48,000. And of course, Bechero, Tim Glyshaw, son of Cantheros. So just a handful of bloodstock news. Let me slip in the couple of racing tidbits. And as we do that, racing tidbits from yesterday, and looking ahead to a couple of visits in this hour. Laura Sloan, as promised. Laura, one of the two trainers that won the makeover, the two makeover competitions that came to a head Saturday and Sunday at the Horse Park. And Lindsay Partridge, who won with Thunderous Affair as well, she'll join us tomorrow. I wanted to get both of them on to talk about their work with Off the Track Thoroughbreds. Laura with the Field Hunter for the greater good. So we'll talk to her in a little bit. Kim Weir in this hour as well, because there is a Thursday viewing that you want to know about, and TRF, of course. And so I promised that we would get a TRF visit in too. So Kim's going to join us. Andy later, and hope to talk to Papo. Papo was on vacation last week. Want to catch up with him and more. Let me give you a couple of stake results from yesterday, kind of pointing you toward that Breeder's Futurity at Finger Lakes. And we had the conversation with Christoph, and Senby was your rather easy winner when it when all the dust settled. And the Reeves, as mentioned, with partner Darlene Belinsky. And Senby, it was bred by Dr. Belinsky, the Candy Ride colt. Manny Franco went up to the lakes to ride, and Adios Asher set the pace, the Ravelli, and Senby was always within close proximity and kind of took over at will. Tafuski Island was third, but was really never threatened with Dylan. So no E.P. Taylor Breeders' Futurity double for Dylan Davis. And of course, E.T. Baird had the he also had pulled off the double, right, for on one timer for Ravelli. And we'll be talking about one timer more as we angle toward the Breeders' Cup, right? In the other stake, and that win was at Finger Lakes, was worth $123,000. Senby paid $340,000. At Presque Isle in the HBPA, Al Nassim for Ed Vaughn with Adam Biskiza came up and rode at Presque. Wire to Wire as just favored over Amniarix, the Graham Motion, right? I think Graham. Was it Amniarix Graham? Yeah, Graham Motion. And Trombetta's No Mo Lady, she was a good third in here with Willie Martinez. And it's funny because she actually did not engage in terms of, you know, stylistically. We suggested to Mike that she would want to be, you know, kind of stalking, and she actually kind of fell out of it. And Willie didn't rush her let her settle and then, you know, started to make progress and ended up getting beat, I don't know, length and change for everything at 12-1. But Al Nassim, 660, the Chamardal mare that was Shadwell bred. You can kind of always tell those Shadwell named, those Shadwell types. And Vaughn owns Al Nassim. Fate Factor second in here for Chris Block with the Loveberry. Jareth Loveberry, who actually came to Presque, rode something, and was second, came in with one mount previously. So there was your stakes from yesterday that we kind of hinted about and forewarned. I do have to mention, I don't think we're going to talk to Bill Downs this week, but Indiana, you know, I was watching the racing yesterday, and before we headed to Saratoga, and you had again another terrific pick five at Indiana. You had two short priced favorites that paid $4 and $3. You had a second choice that started things off for Troy Wisner. Tracy Wisner, excuse me, not Troy, and paid $9.20. So you had a $9.20, a $4.40, and a $3.20. You had two horses that were a little tricky, two fourth choices. In the seventh race, the first level allowance, Auntie Mabel for Ray Hernandez at 9-1, a little more than 10-1. Yeah, paid $22.40. That was the tough horse. And then you had Rocket Docket in the anchor leg for Michelle Elliott. And that one paid $13.60. So you had two fourth choices, a second choice, and two favorites. And the thing paid $1,127. I mean, almost on a daily basis. Today in Indiana, you've got a maiden laden sequence a little bit. You got 7th, 8th, and 9th are all maiden events. Two 3 year olds and up on the turf. And Indiana-bred two-year-olds going short on the main, and then maiden 16s also short on the main track. And then an allowance, a conditional allowance, and a claimer. So I always worth looking at. And I looked ahead to tomorrow at Keeneland, too. Keeneland, there's a couple of very good races tomorrow. Conditional allowance, second level allowance, a couple of maiden specials. Yeah, it's a good pick five and a good turf pick three tomorrow. There's the race that starts the turf pick three. The fourth is a turf sprint that is absolutely going to be a war. 12 horse field, three AEs, and yikes. That is going to be a challenging way. In fact, the pick three tomorrow on the turf, the fourth, the sixth, and the eighth. And the sixth actually has got some very well-known stakes types, like Daddy is a Legend and Dominga. And then the Nightcap is a two-year-old mile and a 16th turf event. So there's your $3 pick three, which, you know, when we had Jim Goodman, the goals that they had have been easily met and exceeded, in fact. The handle's been very good on it. It's gotten a great reception. I haven't seen too much discussion about, you know, people's reaction to it. There was discussion. Laura Sloan is going to join us next. Did you see he had a messy nightcap at Philly yesterday. probably talk to Tony about that. I mean, this was with the DQ, and you had jockeys scattering in every direction. If you haven't seen that, let me see if there's a. I'll see if there's a. If there's a way to get a. To the. I don't know if there's a like a video floating around, but. Wilmer Garcia on Julie's Grace, and creating havoc. So, yeah, that and I think from what I can understand, everybody has walked away. So, I'll ask Tony for an update. All right, Case. Yeah. Give her again. Give her a try again. She should. Talk to her earlier. Laura Sloan is going to join us first, and as mentioned, Lindsay Partridge tomorrow. I don't want to launch into anything else. Before we, although Case, if you continue, you know what? If you have trouble connecting, we could swap with Kim Weir, which is not a crazy idea either, because I know that Kim has got, a obligation at 10. So that may be a practical option, all right? And then get Laura on the other side. All right, so yeah, let me give you that all right. Good. Well, whenever I go, I should really know by now. Whenever I go through that exercise, that's almost like a guarantee that the first guest that you were reaching for is gonna then turn up, and she has. Laura Sloan joins us on the heels of the weekend, and not just the weekend, of course, but really all week and more, because so much goes in to the retraining of the off-the-track thoroughbreds to make the makeover. And Laura, and for the greater good, Field Hunter, win the 2021 edition coming out of Sunday. Laura, congratulations to you. And what is greater good's barn name?
His barn name, and good morning, Steve. His barn name is Dom Perignon, so we call him Dom. And not Dom, Dom. because he has those dapples, and so the owner, Donna Varelli, said, well, he looks like he's a champagne bottle, so he looks like he has bubbles, so that's why we call him Dom Perignon. So,
oh, that's cute.
But yeah, so he goes by Dom.
I love it. And you know, it's funny. It's not just off-the-track thoroughbreds that have barn names. There's plenty of thoroughbreds that are on the racetrack that the barn, you know, the barn help calls something, you know, something,
yeah, well,
that bubbled to the surface.
We couldn't very well call them for the greater good all the time. I mean,
no.
Gets a little long when you're mad at them or something.
I thought maybe Goody was had potential, but talk a little bit about first of all your experience, because you're a professional. About your involvement in, you know, in base, not just retraining, but your whole equestrian background.
Yeah, I've trained hunt horses for over 40 years. I have my colors with six different hunts: Midland, Shake Rag in Georgia, Blue Ridge and Loudon West in Virginia, Millbrook in New York, and Moore County in Southern Pines in North Carolina. And so I've been doing, you know, and I've done a lot of other competitions and everything, but nothing like this. I did judge this, the makeover, in 2016. So I knew about it, and I was just so amazed when I first went there and saw, you know, you go there the first day and all the horses are kind of running around with their heads up and they're all like, blah! And then by the third day, they're all like, you know, superstars. And it's such an amazing experience, all the different disciplines and all the versatility of the thoroughbred. So I was always very impressed with that. And I had a big training barn in Virginia. And in 2017, my significant other retired, and he moved to Montana. And I did not want to go to Montana. So he had the house and the truck and the trailer and the tractor. And so I said, you know, I'd have to get all this stuff. And so I just shut it down. And a friend of mine told me about these people that I knew them from hunting and stuff that were down in North Carolina. And they hunted half the year in Millbrook and half the year in North Carolina. And I went down and interviewed, and, you know, they said, well, you're way overqualified. And I said, look, you guys want somebody to take care of your horses, and I want to have fun. And I said, you don't have to worry about the horses, and, you know, it'll be fun living in Millbrook, New York, which is so beautiful, and spending the winters in Southern Pines, which is an awesome place for horses, and, you know, it's just a great place to be. So I did that, and so we hunted with Millbrook, we hunted with Moore County, and last fall, with my boss, he was hunting, he was 87, and, you know, hunting two or three days a week, and then he started feeling bad, and in December he died of pancreatic cancer.
Mm.
And on the day he died, his wife came to me and said, go get a horse, let's do this. Yeah. So anyways, so I found a horse, which is really crazy to look at the thoroughbred marketplace in December and January. And, you know, because everybody's looking for a horse. And you don't know anything about these horses, if they're crazy or anything. And so finally I just put out there, I said, this is what I'm looking for. Over 16 hands, over 5 years old, you know, quiet. Because to be a fox hunter, they have to have a little bit of a brain. And a friend of mine in Virginia texted me and said, hey, I think I have the horse. I just got this horse in. And so, you know, I had a friend go look at him, and we vetted him, and I went and picked up this shaggy gray thing. And anyway, he clipped him up, and I said, oh, you're not so bad looking. And he's been just, you know, he's been such a nice horse to work with. Not perfect. But he's just dealt with things, and the nice thing is he came from, the breeder raised him, and, you know, she trained him and raced him, and so he wasn't passed around or anything like that. And then when he was done racing, she sent him to this friend of mine. So he's, you know, he hasn't been shuffled around or anything like that, which I think has really been a good thing.
Well, and that breeder, trainer, owner, Donna Lockhart, out of Mid-Atlantic.
Maryland, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And, she and Malia have been, you know, I've kept them up to date on everything that he's been doing, and, of course, obviously they're ecstatic. And somebody texted me today that Dom's grandmother, our grandfather, was getting cookies last night. Congratulating the grandfather. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, and she's actually bred a couple of generations, and this is an old Alan Jerkins family, actually, and Joe Shields. This is a very nice family. This is a Scipion gelding, 6 years old, I think, now.
Yes, he's six.
And let's see, he was 1 for 22 on the track, couple of placements, couple of thirds, and he made almost 50,000. So he had, you know, he had a resume to work with. And, before we talk about the training and what goes into it, you hinted at something that is really key to this discussion. And one of the reasons I wanted to have, you know, you and we'll talk tomorrow to Lindsay Partridge as well. When you say the market, one of the things we tried to stress the other day with Jen Reutz, Laura, is that getting thoroughbreds off the racetrack sound, the value is really there, and it really should motivate connections, you know, to understand that when they think that their horse is coming to the end of the line, you've got something of value.
It's not the end of the line.
Exactly.
Right.
It's the start of something new.
Absolutely. And it really, and then the RRP, the Thoroughbred Makeover, just does such an amazing job of bringing that to attention. And, you know, and I mean, it's crazy looking for horses. Horses are getting bought, you know, within hours. They get posted on online, and then, you know, people, you know, you can't even go see them because, unless you're right next door, because the horse is sold. And it just is amazing. But, you know, I mean, it is such a great, great thing for these horses because, yeah, it is definitely not the end of a career. You know, it may be end of a little of a career that they had, but it's a huge start of another career. And you know, they're such great, great animals, and they just, you know, they just need the attention, and they become, you know, they're fabulous.
It occurs to me to ask this question. I don't want to make a suggestion. Well, I guess you could make the suggestion that there's even a pinhook opportunity here for owners. What does a horse like Greater Good, what is their value in the marketplace after they've been retrained? What can they be sold for?
Oh, they can be sold for a lot of money. I mean, you know, this horse, you know, in just, you know, I got him at the beginning of February, and now it's October, and I mean, he can do the hunters, the jumpers, the eventing, you know, he can do dressage, and he's going to start. I have not hunted him yet because I did not have time, but he's going to start hunting next week, and I mean, you know, but to take him into a derby course or into an event or anything, I mean, he's rock solid, and he's just, you know, he's just kind of a point and shoot guy now, and that only, you know, that took, you know, 9 months or 8 months, and so, you know, but, you know, we worked hard. He's had a very busy time, but they do better. Thoroughbreds do much better with work than they do, you know, just hanging out. They're a lot happier working. They, you know, they would much rather work than just sit around. So, but there's definitely an opportunity to get some value out of these horses, you know, some good value out of these horses.
My point is that for those that want to think multi-steps beyond dropping a horse in for whatever, for $25,000 or less and you know, saying goodbye, that there may be a whole nother avenue. And I should ask too, I mean, in your experience, Laura, when you get an off the track thoroughbred, what conditionally, I mean, if you've got a middle-aged gelding, a 5-6 year old, as you said, you were looking for somebody, you know, in the 5-6 year old range.
Right.
How much wear and tear is on them? Because I mean, they're certainly, you know, arthritis starts nearly immediately.
Right.
How much wear and tear is acceptable on a racehorse coming off the track that is potentially going to be retrained?
Everybody wants their horses to bet and to be perfect. Well, there's no perfect horse, and there's things I shy away from, and this horse fortunately is clean legged, and conformation helps. If they're straight, they're going to stay a lot sounder, and if they're not straight, they're not going to stay as sound, and then they're going to have more issues all over. And and particularly to transition into being an event horse or a dressage horse or hunt horse or whatever, they got to be sound enough to work with.
The the makeover itself, and as you mentioned, you've been involved fairly early on when Stuart got going and have
yes.
a
yeah it's, exactly. You know,
It seems what's fascinating about this is it sort of has brought a whole community into focus for thoroughbred owners and for horse players and everybody, you know, fans in our community on the racing side. There's this whole subculture that you all knew existed, and certain people that cross over were aware of, but it really has. I say this, for years I said it to Stuart and now to Jen, how this is one of the great success stories in post racing career pantheon. It's been a sensation.
Yeah, the thoroughbred makeover is just, it's so amazing. I mean, it just it is just so cool to see all the 10 disciplines and all the horses and it's just amazing what people can look at one horse and go, I'm going to make this horse into a barrel racer, or I'm going to make this horse into a dressage horse, or and whatever they could. You know, two people could be fighting over it for two different disciplines or something. It's just because the horses are so versatile.
Talk about the experience this week, and is bringing your competitor to the horse park. Is there a certain added, atmospheric challenge? Is it something? I mean, you got to figure that thoroughbreds are battle tested, to a certain degree.
I mean, it's amazing because the first time I took him to the Carolina Horse Park, he just kind of looked around and went, "Oh, okay." But the first time I took him to a show, he said, "Where's the race?" And this horse, the main thing with the getting these horses transitioned into a different thing is just wet saddle blankets. I mean, they need to work, and they need to do, this horse is in the trailer 5 days a week, practically doing, whether he's going to a lesson or a trail ride or a hound walk or, a competition or whatever. And that's why when he gets to somewhere, he's like, okay, what are we going to do today? What do you want me to do? And he doesn't, he doesn't get all upset being in a new atmosphere. And that is one of the big things is when they get to the horse park, the Kentucky horse park, because the atmosphere is so, and all the other horses are charged up. If you have a horse that gets there and goes, so what are we doing today? That's you're 80% already succeeding. And then all you got to do is just finish it off. And, but the main thing is you have to put in the time, but if you're going to train a horse, you need to put in the time anyway.
What, in terms of these disciplines, and when we talk tomorrow as well to Lindsay Partridge, I mean, Lindsay competed with Thunderous Affair, who won the 2020 in both freestyle and in competitive trail.
And the trail, yes.
What is the evaluation process, and what are the mechanics about determining what discipline might suit a certain horse?
Just taking the horse, it's kind of, you're kind of, particularly when you're picking him from a distance, you're just kind of having to, a lot of it's luck because it could be quiet in certain situations. It could be quiet around the barn or something and be an idiot, when you take it somewhere, or it could have serious, like separation things and those are things you just have to find out. And the more you do I believe in baby steps. You go slow to go fast. And if you put all your basics down, then when you need them to really step up, if they've got all the basics, they'll step up. But if you rush the beginning process, and just taking them on a trail ride. So you take them for a 5-minute trail ride first, you know. It just, it's okay, we're right here, you know. And then the next day you go a little further, and you go a little further. You don't just head them out, you know, and scare them. But that's just all part of training, is just, you know, just go slow. So, and then you can ask them to step up.
Physically, and for those that didn't hear the either yesterday or when Jen was with us Thursday, eventing, show jumper, show hunter, field hunter, dressage, polo, freestyle, barrel racing, competitive trail, and ranch work are the categories. For instance, with polo, I've always sort of thought that kind of small, speedy, you know, quick
short
burst
couples.
Types, right?
Yeah, exactly. They got to be small so you can get to the ball, and they got to be able to small to be turning. So they got to have, you know, short backed and close coupled, and same thing with the barrel racer. But the other ones are all, you know, you can go with a little longer, a little bigger, whatever. So, but yeah, you just, for your discipline, you know, but like, you know, for fox hunting, for, you know, eventing and, you know, a lot of those, it's just the mind you want, as opposed to the, you know, the physical thing. You know, obviously an eventer has to be a good mover. Same thing with a hunter, you know, a jumper has to be able to jump, but you'll find that out. Fortunately, they all, just about all jump.
What's the distinction between a field hunter and a show hunter?
Well, a show hunter goes just in the ring and has to be kind of, kind of a flat-kneed mover and just covering the ground and quiet and everything. And then obviously a field hunter is out hunting with hounds. And so you need something that definitely has a brain and can handle chaos, because, there's a lot of chaos in the hunt field. The hounds and the other horses running around and the whips and things like that. So you definitely need a horse that can handle things like that. And also, you know, they have to be able to, you know, go through creeks and, you know, jump the jumps and things like that.
And obviously, with the barrel racing, I think everybody has at least seen clips of the barrel racing again. Quick,
right.
Sharp, you know, sharp cutting, you know,
yep.
Cutting horses,
yep.
As they call them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they have to be short back because you got to be able to get them around the turn, you know, a barrel really fast.
And then ranch work, just what it sounds, right?
Yeah.
Herding,
yeah,
and...
In the competition, they do kind of like a little trail stuff, and they have to do a pattern. And then the last part for the final is they have to sort some cows. But it's not, sorting cows is different than cutting cows. It's sorting, you're just kind of moving them, you're not cutting them out like a regular cutting horse, at least particularly not at this stage. And that's another really great thing that about the thoroughbred makeover is, you know, like the jumpers, they're not just jumped on who, they're not judged on just who can jump the highest and go the fastest. You know, the competition part, you have to do flat work, you have to do gymnastics, and then you do a course, and then you do a little jump-off course. And really, none of it is for time or big height. They want to make sure that it's, you know, they all understand these horses have already, you know, just limited time off the track, and they want to work on that you're training the horse properly, which it really impressed me about the thoroughbred makeover.
If thoroughbreds aren't being recruited and trained and used in this work, it is, in terms of the, you know, the competition and the horses that, you know, particularly for equestrian sport, those are warm bloods otherwise?
Yes. Yeah. But I have to admit, I'd much rather work with the thoroughbreds than I would with the dumb blood.
it's
definitely
that's funny. Well, and the thing that's amazing about that is that, and this is the point we're trying to drive home with these conversations and with this particular side of OTTB, which is the Grand Prix. I see these Grand Prix horses being sold for $150,000, and
that's a cheap one.
There you go. That's a cheap one. My best story is my friend Andy Plepler that I grew up with, and his daughter. I saw Andy. I don't know, we were at some function, family functions back in Connecticut, and and Andy's asking me about what I'm doing with racing and broadcasting, etc. And so he says, my daughter's we're looking for a horse for her. And I said, really? What? Well, her coach has got one lined up. $110,000. I said $110,000. I said, I'll give you Corey Bandt. You pay for the shipping. I'll send my retired Johannesburg for nothing. What are you talking about? $110,000.
Uh huh. Crazy. Just crazy. Yep. Very crazy. So, yeah. But that's all right, I mean, the Warmbloods definitely have overtaken that, but I still would much prefer working with the Thoroughbred.
How many of these disciplines, you obviously are focused in in the hunter, jumper side, but would you be? I mean, if somebody came to you and with a certain discipline in mind, can you cross over?
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, definitely. We did. You can only do two disciplines at the makeover, and we did jumpers and we did the fox hunting. But any of those disciplines. You could do, if you can train a horse, teach it anything. You just have to know, have an idea of what you're doing. Whether it's competitive trail or, and Dom, he goes over tarps and drags things. And, I just said, let's play around with this stuff. And he did all that on just, on his off days. I said, well, here, let's play with dragging things around and walking over tarps and going through pool noodles and things like that. So, it's all just good. Good training is good training. Whatever you do with the horse, as long as it's positive, that's the whole thing. It just makes them more versatile.
And, it's interesting. It's interesting that you say some of those obstacles, as it were, right? Because they're very much habit driven, right? So having to teach them and allow them to relax under a different set of conditions has got to be a big part of the exercise.
Yes, and the variety, I took them to a cattle drive and, there's bridges, I was at a trail ride out in Tennessee and they had a little obstacle, a trail bridge, and so we were, I said, here, go over this, I mean, the more you do, the horse just accepts, this is what she wants done. This is what we're going to do. And so, so whenever you ask them to do something, they go, okay. And the more you do with them, then they just become better.
To go back to the training portion of this and the way you explained how finding Dom and going forward with him, is this akin to dog owners and a handler in terms of paying? I mean, is there a day rate? Is how is the structure of that from a finance standpoint?
Well, I work for these people. They bought the horse, and they were Donna, the wife, Donna Varelli. She just said, do whatever you want to do, and I would give her the schedule of what he was going to do. And she allowed me to do everything. So it was, it was great. So, you know, I work here, I manage the farm here, and, you know, but it was, I mean, she was just allowed me to do, you know, he went to a pony club camp and events and shows, and it's, you know, just opportunities to get him out and to, you know, have him do, you know, to just keep getting going forward.
What, if you're comfortable answering, and if you're not, it's all right too. What's the cost involved, and in terms of what it, you know, you had this horse for, well, 8 months essentially training him.
Yeah, I don't know because I don't see the bill, but it wasn't you know, because I'm careful about that, and so, you know. You know, like, I could take him to a show at the Carolina Horse Park, which has, you know, the fabulous venue, almost the same type of atmosphere as the horse park, but smaller, but still a really nice venue. And, you know, you could just go out and go schooling for $25, and the horse gets the atmosphere. I mean, he doesn't know if he's competing or schooling. It doesn't matter to him. He just needs to be in the atmosphere and be doing something. And so instead of spending $200 and going to an A show and getting a stall and doing this and doing that, you know, where you really run up the bills, you can just take them to someplace and school them for the day and, you know, and pay $25, and the horse gets the same exact experience. You know, he doesn't know if he's in competing or if he's just going around schooling. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, you don't have to say, you know, well, we're going to have to spend, you know, $500 this week and we're going to spend $500 next week. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. You can do it a lot, very inexpensively, if you just are smart about it. And so, you know, and you don't have to go to, you know, $300 clinics. You can go to a $35 clinic. And, you know, and it's all good as long as the horse, you know, it doesn't matter what, as long as the horse is doing something positive, then it's, you know, you're moving forward.
What happens now with Dom, with the makeover winner?
Well,
what's his schedule coming up?
He's going to start hunting, and so hopefully he's going to turn into a fabulous hunt horse. And, I want to do some of the hunter derbies with him, so keep competing him that way. In Virginia, they have the North American Field Hunter Championships in October, and I've been reserved for that, and I've been best turned out for that, but I haven't won it. So I think that would be a good thing. If he's good at hunting, then we'll be heading to Virginia next October, and I'll try our hand at that little competition.
So there's a circuit, essentially.
Yes. And they, you know, there's hunter trials that are fun to go to, and, you know, so he's, you know, it's good. It'll be good for him to keep competing because it's, you know, it keeps him. He likes that stuff. And so we'll just see what he, you know, what we want to do with him. But this was good. This was a good goal, and. And we achieved our goal. Finally exceeded our goal, really.
Yeah, exactly. You not only got him there, and you won the division, and then you won best in show.
Exactly.
How many have you previously taken to makeover?
This is my first one.
Wow.
So whether I do it again, just because, gosh, you hate to fall short, you know. When you do it the first time and you do it well, but we, you know, that was the goal, and you know, and we worked very hard for our, you know, I mean, not hard because it was fun doing it, but we were focused on every step of the way was getting to the makeover and one doing, you know, one, not embarrassing ourselves, that's always the first thing, two, to do well, and three, to win.
Three for three.
That was good.
Outstanding. Yeah. Laura, and how long, finally, how long does a horse like the greater good, how long can this second career be?
Oh, for the next 20-some years. He's six. I've had hunt horses out in the hunt field. You know, I mean, he can be doing this for another 20 years. He's clean-legged, and I think he can be doing this for a long time. And he'll be he'll be a lot whiter. I like his dapples now. So he's going to get a lot whiter, but he's got a good start, and he's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, Laura, this was a lot of fun, and we'll talk to Lindsay Partridge tomorrow as well, and Kim Weir is standing by from TRF as well to another set of jobs for horses, in this case for Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, but delighted to be able to congratulate you and introduce you to racing audience and horse players. If people want to get in touch with you about their horses, how do they do it?
They can either find me on Facebook find me on Facebook. It's probably the easiest thing.
Very good. Just That's Laura Sloan, S-L-O-A-N.
Yes.
I'll find a link to it.
Thank you very much.
Not at all, Laura. I'm delighted. Laura Sloan, for the greater good, a Scipion 6-year-old gelding that wins the 2021 side of the makeover this weekend, and the 2020 side, which was awarded Saturday. Tomorrow, we'll talk to Lindsay Partridge. And Lindsay's interesting because it's a different discipline, which makes it fun. The fact that Partridge, competitive trail and freestyle. And the freestyle is very crazy with the tarpaulin that they throw over the horse. I had never seen that. That was crazy.
Just the imagination that goes into just planning that is amazing. And by the way, this is the first time a field hunter's ever won.
Oh, that's
so
great.
It does go to freestyle many times. Freestyle probably more, and dressage, but this first time a field hunter has won. So that's kind of interesting.
That's a nice distinction as well. That's like when we get some breed and best in show at Westminster,
right.
And it's first time
exactly.
ever, so it's that it's
exactly.
that kind of distinction. Well done, Laura. Thanks again.
Great, thank you. Nice talking to you, Steve. Have a good day.
You too. Laura Sloan, everybody. And as I mentioned, Kim Weir from Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, TRF, standing by and listening in as well. And the 20th anniversary show for Lowell and the employment of thoroughbreds off the racetrack to help convict rehabilitation, and we've talked about it before, but this is kind of a special scenario on Thursday, 8:00. And Kim, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It is so great to be with you today, and I just want to jump in and congratulate Laura and her fabulous field hunter. I just love that story. I've done a lot of fox hunting in my day, and I just think it's so cool. So thanks for letting me listen in a little bit.
Not at all. And the makeover to me cannot be just cannot get enough attention and enough promotion, and same, of course, with you. And one of the things, one of those questions that I followed up with about just now with Laura, really for your benefit, as what TRF's charge is, and the size of the herd, and the fact that there's any number of retirees that TRF farms maintain that they're going to be maintaining for the rest of their lives. So the more horses that find their way into programs like the makeover and find active duty jobs, essentially, that means there's less, a smaller number that, are going to be out in a pasture, essentially, in a field. And it makes things, it really takes some pressure off of TRF's mission and, the difficult responsibility of maintaining a herd the size of TRF's.
Exactly. Now, the image that somehow is popping to mind, you're capturing it so well, Steve, is that somehow I'm thinking of, like, high school athletes. So, you know, in the spirit of all these talented young, you know, people in the high school athlete role who've found something they love to do and are great, but when they go on to college, they go on to their next step, it takes a lot of people at that young person's moment in time, you know, their college guidance counselor, their teachers, their coaches, their parents, their friends, to help them say, where do you need to go next? What's the right best step for you? And that is thoroughbred racehorses when they finish their racing career. They're young, they're not even teenagers. They're, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old when they finish their racing career. And it takes a village. You are such a cheerleader for this village, Steve, to say what is the right best step for that horse at that moment with their diploma in their hand, as it were. Do they go be a field hunter with Laura? Do they go be a police horse like this great gray I've just been spending time with at Blackburn? Do they go... Or is it because of an injury they've sustained, or that they need to go and do something a little more sedentary, perhaps? And that's what the horses sort of do at our program and the Second Chances program. They still have a job. They still have a purpose. They're still using their talents, but they're just got to be in the right place. And we have to do that for each and every one of the horses as they come off the track. And together, we can get it done.
Well, and if you to put a dollar and cents figure to give, as an example, I mean, what is the monthly maintenance on a horse that is in the herd?
Yep, that's why I always love to bring it down to brass tacks. So our average cost of care for one horse in the TRF herd, all 500 horses, is $2,500 for the year, which is a really honestly very, very low number, and I don't want to freak anybody out who's listening, especially those who are managing horses and training. But the difference is that they are living a pretty simple lifestyle, and we keep half the herd in prisons. But $2,500 is a number to put first in everyone's mind. And then you'd multiply that for us times 500, and it goes on, and it obviously goes on and on and on. Just like Laura will have her horse doing his thing for 20 more years for sure, because he's got good legs. You know, they're going to live with us till they're 25 to 30, occasionally older, and every year they need those dollars. And like seniors in human life, they usually need more dollars as they get older because things start needing more care. But it is. The economics of it are very important to talk about, and it is actually a big piece of what we're doing with our program on Thursday, which I love you helping me promote. Thank you, Steve.
No, not at all. The reason I bring this up, and here we'll pull out a calculator, and we'll say, mm-hmm. I mean, if a horse like for the greater good, if keep it real simple. 15 years times 2,500 is $37,500. That means for every horse like him that gets sent while sound at the end of his career in this direction, that's how much savings is involved that can be used elsewhere for, you know, the maintenance of or the retraining. I mean, think about how many, you know, how far that really would go in terms of retraining other horses. And mm-hmm. The message that I'm driving home with you and with Laura and then tomorrow as well with Lindsay Partridge is the retire sound. The banner, the retire sound that needs to be flown and driven home, because these horses are way more valuable to you as an owner and to the industry if they move into a second career. It's enhancing the value. I mean, Laura laid it out in real amazing terms. It may turn out that a lot of horses are not may turn out. It has turned out that a horse like For the Greater Good, who made $48,000, is more valuable in his second career than he was in his first. And if we have that mentality about, you know, all, the whole universe of active racing thoroughbreds, it I think is a different mindset and approach that pays off long term in terms of looking after them and easing them into a second life, essentially.
Absolutely. No, retire sound is a slogan we just all must yell from every rooftop. And knowing that it's not always possible. So it's like that, you know, college football player. He doesn't finish with his shoulder intact for some reason. But if that's the goal, then we're just working with the exceptions to the rule. And that's what the TRF rule really, really is to be the safe catch, the safety net, when retire sound doesn't happen. And we know that it won't always happen, but if we're aiming for it, it'll happen less. More of these horses will go on and do what Laura has done. More of them will go on to second and sometimes third careers. This horse I just spent time with at Blackburn, I took all these VIP visits to Blackburn over the last couple of weeks. He was a police horse. He was a racehorse. Walensky is his name, and I don't have his figures right in front of me, but Walensky did whatever he did on the racetrack. He found his way into the Atlanta Police Department, where he was a police horse for like 15 years. And then he came to Blackburn when he was 22. And that's perfect, because then we're going to have Walensky for maybe 8 years. And we are a safe, very safe, happy place for him where he's changing lives. But it's the economics, coming back to it, he was earning his keep for all those years in Atlanta. He was doing his job, and it's much more possible for us to take care of him for 8 years than for all 30 of his years. Retire sound is the phrase of the day. It's the phrase of our sport, and I love it, Steve. You've nailed it.
Well, and the, you know, the key is that you can defray the expenses of maintaining these herds, and the reality is there's very few of them that would prefer to be pasture ornaments. As Laura was explaining, and as we've stressed repeatedly in our visits, they like to be engaged. I mean, the biggest difficulty that you have at the racetrack is that they're stalled for 23 and a half hours a day. And that's not natural. And at the same time, they also, you know, they don't mind coming in at night and spending a night in a stall. But they like to be engaged and challenged. So that's the key theme.
True across our whole herd. I mean, ours may be old, but they still get bored. And that's why the Second Chances program is so good for them. I mean, you and I both talk a lot about the double benefit of our Second Chances program, and right now I'm sort of heavy on the human impact. But those horses at Blackburn that I just spent all this time with, they love having a routine, because we all know racehorses love their routines. Animals love routines, but thoroughbreds really do. And they like to know they're doing something, and they're being taken through these agility courses, and they're learning how to back up through poles. I mean, their brains need to be engaged just like ours do. So, you know, our strategic goal, big picture for the TRF, is to move as many of our horses into our Second Chances program for that very, very same reason. They do better with more humans, and they do better with more things to do. So it's just so cool to be on at the same time as Laura. I really do admire what she's done, and just love your approach to it all, Steve. You have the picture, and I'm so glad you're helping us share it and paint the picture for your listeners too.
Well, my pleasure. Let's paint the picture for Thursday night,
yay.
48 hours away, 8 o'clock, and the 20th anniversary at Lowell. Talk about what's coming up on Thursday.
Yes, it is. It is a celebration. It is like the clock is ticking. I cannot wait. I feel like I have the best present ever to give to every single human on the planet that takes the time to tune in. This is my guarantee, is that if you watch this thing on Thursday or any time thereafter, you're going to feel better about the world. Like, that's a pretty big promise, and it's one I absolutely will deliver upon. So this is a celebration. It is a celebration of countless, truly countless individuals who have brought our TRF Second Chances program in Ocala to life and to kept it going for 20 years. This is truly astonishing to me that I get to talk about this. So 20 years ago, visionaries in our industry, particularly some individuals people will know like Dick Hancock and Linda Miller, who are now gone but left this legacy in creating the program in Ocala. And those horses not always the same horses, but the horses over time have been doing their job, being horses, which means all the things horses do. They get hurt, they get hungry, they get cold, and they get cared for by the individuals at Lowell. And so what we're doing on Thursday is we're celebrating all that has come before and the fact that we have a program that has been saving horses and changing lives for over two decades. But we're doing that celebration by showing everybody what does that look like? Who are these horses? And more importantly, who are these people whose lives have been changed? And so the gift I'm giving everyone is a front row seat to a movie, sort of a movie premiere. That's the feel of this thing, is to sit down in your comfortable chair with some kind of a beverage and go with me and our crew on this journey to see what it looks like. And more importantly, to feel what it feels like. To this point, Steve, I have to tell you that we have to give so many kudos to our friend Acacia Courtney, who has been the executive producer, director, cinematographer of this experience. She flew down to Ocala on her own time in June, and between all of her other things she does, she filmed the women, and more importantly, she got them to open up and share their stories. So yeah, on Thursday, 8 o'clock, everyone sit down, click a button. It's as simple as that. There's no tickets. There's no money being asked for. We just want you to join us and to watch it. Come with an open heart and an open mind and see what's been happening in Ocala for 20 years and what's happening today while you and I are speaking and what's happening across the country. You know, from there, all things are possible. But if you are not aware, you can't care. And so that's what Thursday is all about.
Well, and we'll put up the links, but you go to trfinc.org and you can put in an RSVP, which will be a reminder about the link and basically, you know, keep you from missing it and forgetting. Not that you can't watch it later on, but it'll be more fun watching it live with everybody. And obviously, and whenever we have these visits, I mean, at the heart of this is a call to arms for donation, but you've got some people that have really, you know, make this kind of a presentation particularly available. I mean, talk about the support that, you know, that really is the underpinning of these kinds of programs.
Yeah, this is a big deal for us in a bunch of ways. It's a chance to celebrate this extraordinary thing and to show it to the world. But behind the scenes, and I so appreciate you helping me do this, Steve, we want to also acknowledge that while this is not a per se fundraiser, those who are watching will not feel like they're being, you know, shaken down too directly. but behind the scenes, we've had an amazing group of sponsors come with us and support the Lowell program. And what that means is this event on Thursday not only will reach thousands of people around the world with our message, but it has raised, with our sponsors, $50,000 towards the Lowell program, which is 50% of our operating budget for that program. It is a big herd. It's 50 horses and 100 acres. It's about $100,000 a year. And so thanks to our sponsors, I would love for everyone to take a look at and think about them, because they have already, that we're all good to go. We're ready to share our thanks on Thursday. These sponsors have helped us reach our goal of 50% of the entire operating budget for Lowell for this year. And that's what we have to keep doing. Now, granted, like you said, it keeps going. We have the same budget next year. But I want to make sure I say thank you to each of them, and I won't bore everyone with running the list. But look at how interesting that list is when you do. It's industry players, it's lots of names you recognize, and then it's a whole bunch of people that you may not have heard about. Businesses like Lazy Dog Cookie Company here in Boston Spa and Jellyfish Water. These are folks who just care about what we're doing and said, yes, I'm a small business, I'm going to send you a check for $1,000 to support those horses. The other piece of this, which I will ramble only one more second to say, the reason we've raised 50% of the operating budget is because we have the most extraordinary partnership with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association, and they have been carrying the water of this program for 20 years. And it's not just an association that does that. It's all of their members. It's the Florida horsemen. It's the Florida breeders. It's the two-year-old in training. It's everybody in the Florida equine thoroughbred industry that has been supporting this program. They've been doing it through FTBOA and through the Florida Thoroughbred Charities, but it has been going straight to Lowell. So this year is a very important year, the 20-year anniversary, because we're celebrating a transition where FCBOA will remain with us. They are completely committed and they continue to support us. But it is time for the TRF and all of the supporters of the national organization to ask folks to come in and help and to cover those costs. It's not just on Florida horsemen to cover this one. It's all of us who care about these horses. So we've accomplished something pretty major just behind the scenes with this program. But I can only say thanks, and I'll continue to say thanks. And the whole show is a thank you note to everyone who's ever helped these horses at Lowell.
Well, and I'll slip in some names, platinum sponsors, the Hyder family, who, of course, we see on the racetrack with the familiar kind of burgundy jacket and gold trim. Dr. Nicholas Matinas.
Yep.
Who's a vet?
Absolutely. We love vet support. And Nick is actually on our board and active in the Mid-Atlantic area. And I hope to see him this weekend at Maryland Millions, in fact. So grateful to he and Stephanie for making such a big leadership gesture as a platinum sponsor.
You mentioned the FTBOA, our gold sponsors, as well as Gary and Mary West and Dr. Burghardt as well. Silver sponsors, CDI and Aaron Wellman and the Eclipse partners, as well as Blue Moon Aftercare, which actually is a new name to me. Jill and Bob Baffert as well, and then a host of others. You mentioned a couple, and NYFA involved, Niall Brennan, Little Red Feather, the Cassies, Brookledge, Bergen Stable, and Polyflex Horseshoes, which I think there's a chance that our Shirzando wears, as it happens.
I bet they're really... thank you, Steve, for doing that. Thank you for doing the part that I think is so important, and it's even better in your voice to hear those sponsors and know that we really appreciate each and every moment of their support. They are supporting us with their dollars. They're also supporting us, like Mark Cassie. I get to have Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie will be on the program on Thursday, a multi-generational Ocala boy, as he describes himself. We'll also have Niall Brennan, who's not only supporting us with sponsorship, but will be on the program because Niall and Stephanie have hired directly from this program in Lowell. They've done it. They've got folks on their team who are the graduates, and we'll share that. So that's a greater gift than any dollar. Not that I don't always need the dollars, but there are some amazing people on each and every one of those people are wonderful, and they're only there, and we only thank them like this, Steve, to inspire those who want to join them, because those dollars are going to directly support the care of the horses at Lowell. There's essentially been no operating expenses for this event. So just to be clear, to get kind of into the weeds, this is not an event that has any overhead. Keisha donated her time. Our photographers, our editors are doing all of this because they want us to raise the dollars for the horses. So huge thanks to all the sponsors. And Steve, thank you so much always for letting me come tell our stories. This one's very, very extra special. Even in my crazy, always excited about everything mode, this one is really, really amazing. I have seen it, and I hope you believe me. My husband laughs just like you do. He's like, you always say that, but I mean it this time.
You can set yourself a reminder. 8 o'clock on Thursday. We'll remind you everybody again tomorrow and on Thursday. And actually, I've seen the banners that are around too, the brown with the TRF tree and horse logo, and the second chances program at Lowell, 20th anniversary, 8 o'clock, and all the information that you would want and opportunity to support the incredible work of TRF, TRFinc.org. And I mentioned the other day, in anticipation of your visit too, that it is the winter season's approaching, which means it's hay drive time.
Absolutely. I'll be back. It's time. It's the season.
it's always hay drive season, but it's particularly in the winter portion. This got to fill those hay lofts before the snow flies. So that's coming as well. But Thursday is the first order of business, 8 o'clock. And sign up and get a reminder and join in. It's I know that Pete's having a watch party as well, and really really special. Kim Weir, as always, thanks so much.
It's such a pleasure. See you out in San Diego, Steve.
Absolutely. There you go. Exactly. TRF Inc. on Twitter as well, for those that may or may not be aware and following. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour is coming up, and when we come back, we got Andy Serling, top of the hour at 11. Going to visit with Chris Davis, and it occurred to me to reach out to Chris because, you know, we are always having visits with, you know, the successful, you know, the stake winners, but then there's horses that are coming to Breeders' Cup that, you know, have not won necessarily, but have been really good. And Chris Davis has gotten not one, but two. And it's kind of funny because, you know, he's been second in the Iroquois with Tough to Tame, second in the Sapling and in the Prairie Meadows Juvenile, and then, of course, fourth in the Breeders' Futurity the other day with American Sanctuary. So I would think having two horses heading to Breeders' Cup to the Juvenile and having all those stake placements, that definitely qualifies for a visit. And I just got to assume Chris's and you know, the connections are absolutely, you know, excited about getting out to Breeders' Cup. And that's Dare to Dream is American Sanctuary, and I don't know about the other ownership side. I don't know. So we'll get that from Chris next. Second half at the races Tuesday. Get together here on SiriusXM. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania